now who's gonna fight the next fight? Look here. Who's gonna fight the next goddamn fight? Do we even have a next fight? God damn it, do we have a next fight? Come on, man, do we have a next fight?
All cinematic fighters worth their salt have their sage elder mentors. Rocky, of course, had Mickey. Million Dollar Baby's Maggie Fitzgerald had the crusty Frankie Dunn. Luke had Obi-Wan. And Leon Gauthier, Jean-Claude Van Damme's character in Lionheart, had Joshua Eldridge. Joshua added not only the humor but the true humanity and the drama to the by-the-numbers fight flick, which was to further bolster the box office impact of the film's writer and star, Van Damme, ushering him in as the new Stallone/Schwarzenegger. It was not really meant to be, though, as the film opened at number 3 on January 11, 1991, and quickly dropped off the radar, though it still often ranks high in fan favorites, some even saying that it was the high point of his ability as an actor, at least before JCVD was released in 2008, and it was remade, albeit unofficially, in a little film so creatively called Fighting, starring Terrence Howard and Channing Tatum in 2009. But regardless of the rank on the Van Damme-ometer, it's indisputable that tonight's guest truly put the heart in Lionheart. Welcome to another edition of Natsukashi, where we provide our memories a roundhouse of reality. My name is Rob. I will serve as your host. And joining us for tonight's podcast is our contributor, Count Vargelon, and our featured guest, Mr. Joshua Eldridge himself, Mr. Harrison Page. Greetings, gentlemen. How are you?
Hey, how you doing?
Fantastic, and happy to be here as ever.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was quite a build-up to that film. It's like you jogged my memory a little bit.
Good. I'm always up for a jog. So.
Okay.
We partners, man. Huh? Yeah. Don't neither one of us ever forget that.
Count, let's go to you first. You said that this is a must for you on your list. Why? Did this film start you on your MMA career?
Well, actually, kind of.
Okay.
The funny thing is, this is my first martial arts movie. You know, the first time I really saw a martial arts movie, and it was just when that trend was starting. But the thing that excited me most about it was, obviously, it was very R-rated, and I was too young to be watching it, as is my experience with a lot of the films we've covered here on the site. But I badgered my parents into letting me see it for a simple reason, and that's because Harrison Page was in it.
It had his blessing.
Oh, yes. that's nice of you to say.
Well, the fact is, as I talked about last time when we covered Clue, I learned from Clue, and, you know, being a fan of Tim Curry, to follow actors from project to project, and you know, we're not here to talk about the show, but I'd just like to say that Sledgehammer is my favorite show of all time.
Oh, no, really? Well, there you are, you see?
So when I found out that there was an action movie starring Harrison Page, because you appeared in the trailer quite prominently, I absolutely had to see it. Just as a kid, I saw it on the movie network, I taped it, I watched the heck out of it, because, you know, I became obsessed with martial arts movies after seeing this movie, but it's so different from other action movies at the time, you know, and as a kid, this really spoke to me, what a good-natured action movie it was.
Okay. It's interesting because Jean-Claude and I talked about that. When we actually finished the film, we said, this seems to me, I used to say to him, as a matter of fact, every day, I said, this seems to me different in terms of martial art films, because there were other people out there doing martial art films that didn't have the kind of heart that did. It was action, it was good action, but the human thing was not always there. And our relationship, we decided that our relationship was different for two men on the screen in a martial arts film, in that we had what we call a love story.
Yeah.
those two guys. And because of the banter you know, everybody who saw it because of the banter said, wow, these two guys, I get the feeling these guys really like each other.
They refer to it now, Harrison, as a bromance.
Oh, bro, oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. Bromance.
Yeah.
As in bromance.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Got it.
And
got
yet,
it.
Even as a kid, it just appealed to me so much because, you know, so many of the films were always just about revenge and violence and brutality, but this is an unabashedly sentimental action movie.
Yeah.
And that's
exactly
what I loved about it as a child. And when I came back to it, which we can discuss in a minute, I liked it even more.
After all these years, you liked it even more.
I did, which we can discuss when we get
okay
to that part. But
yeah, okay,
first, you know, how did you get in this movie? Like, how did that happen?
Well, interestingly enough, I actually heard about it, and I went in to meet with the director, Sheldon Lettich. Actually, Sheldon said, yeah, you know, I've seen your work before on television and stuff, and I don't know if you're right for this, but, you know, it's something we can actually try. So I went in to meet with them, and I did an audition with them. And I'd learned a lot about acting at that particular time because I knew that the strongest thing that you can have in any story, the strongest thing you can have is a love story. But there was not a love story with him and the woman. That was a whole kind of combative thing going on. And I said, I want to tackle this thing between these two guys. What is this? You know, I introduced him to street fighting and the whole thing, and I acted as his manager, this kind of crazy manager that he's got, and there's this kind of humor going on. I said, well, this must be something going on here that's a little richer. So when I went in to talk to them, I said, I think I'm going to tackle this love story thing. They liked that idea. So mostly they went with me on this thing because I wanted to bring compassion and humanity to it, along with all the other stuff and all the other humor that I had with it. You know, the guy with the limp and you know, talking like he's a, you know, a complete street urchin, which is what he was. But I wanted to introduce that faction to it, and they liked that, and that's how it happened.
Hey, where you want to go now, man? You want to get some girls, want to go dancing, you know what I'm saying? Where you want to go?
Got some business to finish. Personal business.
Is something I can help you with, man?
Yeah. Maybe.
Yeah. Hey, look at that. Let's drink to that, man. Hey, put him up there.
Harrison, you had done a ton of TV, and I mean,
right,
we could go everything from dramas like Melrose Place, Hill Street Blues, Cold Case ER, 21 Jump
yeah
Street, and then
yeah
comedies going all the way back to like CPO Sharky, Benson, Wonder
oh
Years.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah,
yeah.
So
yeah,
this was one of your only, I mean, I know you worked in film early on in your career, but then
mm-hmm
you switched primarily to television. What
right
was it about this that brought you back to the big screen?
I'm an actor. This had a part. It had something I could actually get my, you know, I could get my soul into. You
right
know, it was a guy that had, you know, I could have, you know, anybody could have played that part. But, you know, I don't know if anybody would have decided to do it in the way that I did it. There was nothing in the script about the guy having these emotions. You know, when they're in the fight, that last fight, there was nothing in the script that says this guy really breaks down and gets very emotional.
Right.
There's nothing there about that. It's just a fight, and he's going, you know, you're going to get killed out there. That stuff I brought to it. And so that was there for me to do. And I said, I want to do this because I can bring, again, like the love story thing, I want to do this also because I can bring this other emotional stuff to it, you know, other than what you normally see two guys doing. You rarely see guys on the screen in a martial arts movie crying.
Right.
You don't see that.
Right, right.
So,
ever. I'm just amazed to discover that everything I liked about this movie, you brought to this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just...
Yeah, yeah. And most of the dialogue, this is another little secret, a lot of the dialogue was improvisation. A lot of it.
Huh.
Yeah, that was stuff I brought, you know, thinking, well, this would help to, you know, cement what I thought the movie should be about. And at the end of this film, when we finished this movie, and they looked at it and they got it ready for distribution, they said, you know, this wasn't what we were expecting. We were not expecting his character to jump out like this. And I said, I understand that. I said, but, you know, if I'm going to do the part, I got to do it all the way. and they said, well, you know what? You gave us a whole lot more than we were expecting and what we wanted. So you're going to like this when you see it. So that was, it was a nice thing for me to do it. And you know what? I've not done anything really that good since. I mean, in terms of my getting a real, you know, getting a good start, you know, good part and something that I could do something with. That was like the last of that.
She said she tried to call me 2 weeks ago. Nobody told me. Why?
This is a foreign legion, Gautier. Not Club Med.
We're talking about my brother. He can be dead by now.
And we could be at war with the bloody Vargs tomorrow. I need your ass here. Your brother is not my problem. Or yours anymore. You gave up your family when you joined the Legion.
I never gave up my family.
It seemed like Jean-Claude Van Damme's every movie was going to be his big breakout movie, and it never made it that way. I mean, it always picked up, his films always picked up their life once they hit the VHS shelves.
Right.
And there was never that one shining moment. And I remember back in the, you know, 1990s, I remember the Bloodsport prior to this.
Right.
And Cyborg, which really bombed. But then this one was supposed to be his real kind of mainstream crossover, made in America success for him.
Right.
And what was it like working with him on that? Was he anxious? Was he...
Oh, he, you know, he's a, you know, I love him. He's a very independent individual. And he certainly has strong points of view. You know, sometimes it was a little challenging, but that always happens.
Sure.
But I think what we were able to do is we were able to use a lot of his anxiety about what he was doing, because Jean-Claude didn't know that movie was going to be his breakout movie or was supposed to be. As far as he was concerned, it was another film where he could do, you know, his martial arts and kind of be this kind of strong, silent character. I think what took place, which was a big change, was my coming into it bringing something that, you know, nobody thought this would happen. Nobody thought, well, we're going to bring this guy in and it's going to be, he's going to be the sidekick, and he's going to say, you know, he's going to be the sidekick thing, you know. And I think what I brought into it, I think, changed everybody's mind. You know?
Right.
And I'm not, this is not to say I'm bragging or, you know, or patting myself on the back. It's just that even after I've seen it several times myself, and even my watching it, I see what actually took place.
This is my hood, motherfucker, and I asked the question. So how much you want to pay?
Well, he ain't got no money, motherfucker. I got the goddamn money, and I'll kick your ass. You ain't getting shit.
Motherfucker's gonna pay now.
Man?
Come on, man.
All right, Harrison, I read in an interview with you prior that you are a believer in everything in threes. So give me your...
You read that? Where'd you read that?
Online. Everything's online, friend. Everything's online.
Damn.
So, give me your top three memories of working on the film. And if you don't have the three there, then just the three in general. But three is specifically in Lionheart, if you have three.
Three great moments in it?
Yeah.
Three great moments?
Yep.
One of my terrific moments, and you're talking about in the film, not backstage,
anything. No, you can do either or. And you can do a mixture of both however you wish.
Okay. It may be a little bit more than three, but I do believe in threes.
Okay.
One of my great moments for that film and shooting was when the guy gets out, when I get out of the, if you remember this, we're in this limousine with the woman, and we get out on the street, and we're trying to find the airport or something or another. I don't remember.
You're trying to find a payphone to call a cab.
Ah, there you go. So we get out in the limousine, and we get out, and he goes, man, I don't want to do this or something or another. Well, you know, what do you want and all that stuff. And I come up to him and I said, look, we gotta do this thing, because I'm trying to get him to fight. At that particular point, I'm having a little bit of trouble in terms of my energy, because, you know, this guy's not in great shape. And I bend over and I'm resting my hands on my knees. And for the first time, for me as an actor, the first time that came without rehearsal, and it came out of just, you know, just what was going on with he and I just found myself frustrated, and I put my hands on my knees to rest a little bit and to try to get my energy back.
Right.
But for me, it was such a spontaneous thing, and it wasn't something I intended to do, but it just happened, and it was like, ah, there it is.
Well, luckily,
and that's one thing. That's one thing, yeah, in the film.
I was going to say, luckily, the street gangs that you faced in that scene looked like they were out of a DeBarge video, so they didn't look all that threatening. So, you know,
they were a little, yeah, they were a little slick looking, as a matter of fact. Exactly. Yeah, you know, it's like these guys, you know. And the other thing is, as a matter of fact, you were mentioning the so-called street gang guys. There was a lot of references to the N-word in this thing, and I said, you know what? I don't know whether that says anything about anything, and I don't know if I have to even say it. So during the fight, when this guy comes up to me and he calls me the N-word, I'm supposed to give it back to him. I'm supposed to call him the N-word.
Right.
And I said to myself, I said, well, you know what? What's the point of that? So it's a favorite moment for me because then I beat the crap out of him. You know, and another spontaneous thing was that if you remember the film, the phone gets wrapped around his neck.
Yeah.
That wasn't in there either. It's just something that at the moment that I just decided, as far as I'm concerned, he had like broken the traditional rule. It was, you know, he wasn't supposed to be calling me that.
Right.
That was not a word he's supposed to be using, you know, for the world to see that we're supposed to be like these African Americans. He's got to be calling me the N-word.
Right.
So a lot of what that was when I wrapped the phone around his neck was to say, I never want to hear you say that word again. You know, and it was like all very spontaneous and improvisational right there.
I told you, 50-50 all the way down the line. Well, I'm going to split it with you, man. 50-50 all the way, man, just like I said I would. Look, it's on him, man. The whole bet's on Attila.
Wrong bet.
The third moment for me, that after the fight, and even reflecting now, it starts to move me a little bit. After the fight, I get up from the floor and I walk over to him because, you know, I've really screwed up here, you know. I've bet against him, you know, I've turned on my buddy, and I'm feeling a lot of emotion about that. And I get up and I start to talk to him about it, and the tears come. And then when I go up, and what's interesting about Jean-Claude is Jean-Claude's not used to crying on screen either. So when I got to him and started to talk to him with all this emotion, I looked in his eyes and I saw tears coming out too. And this was, and it was a great moment for me because he always represents the stoic, strong, powerful guy that doesn't, you know, he doesn't get emotional.
Yeah.
And it got him. And I said, aha, that's a goodie. You know, that's good. And when I hugged him, he really went to pieces when I hugged him. So that's the three that I recall.
I was watching that movie last night. That moment really hit me. It's just so intense and so raw and so real that, like, this, as you said, this is an action movie ending with you apologizing and hugging and crying the lead. It's just incredible.
I know. That was another thing that was not written. That just happened. You know, we're all people. I mean, so we feel things. It just so happens that actors get an opportunity to expose it. So, I mean, that moment to me was a real moment that I was actually feeling like I had betrayed him, and that he went through this fight with this guy who was supposed to actually, you know, really massacre him because I you know, he wasn't going to be able to. Plus, he was injured, you know, so.
Yeah.
It was a great moment for me. Those are the three that I remember. I'm sure there are more.
Sure. Well, I didn't mean to limit you. I just wanted to go by your words, so. Yeah. I want to switch gears because we have to, because we have you here. We would be remiss if we did not take a detour into Sledgehammer and you as the order-barking, Pepto-Bismol-swigging Captain Trunk of the, you know, one of the most criminally underseen
well, thank you.
Programs, really, honestly, and yeah. I don't know if a lot of people know this, but our listeners should know that this was the proving ground for a couple guys named Al Jean and Mike Rice, who later went on to do a little show called The Simpsons, I think it was called.
Yeah, it was called The Simpsons.
Yeah. But critics have called this deranged brilliance. It was named the best show of the year of the at that time by TV Guide. Glamour magazine called it comedy at its best.
Officer's investigation coming. Any leads?
Not really, but after a few more victims get killed, we'll have more to go on.
A few more? You're not supposed to let anybody else get killed. You're supposed to stop that maniac. Look what the press has labeled this creep.
Oh, this makes me want to throw up. Look at that. Why is the press always glorifying violent people? They write about somebody like me for a change.
Oh, Hammer! You know what? That was another situation where I got to tell you this, because it sounds like I'm repeating myself. But this was another piece that I was not right for. The guy was supposed to be this huge guy with this, you know, this power, and so that Sledgehammer could be somewhat intimidated by him. And I am not huge. I mean, I'm a, you know, nice sized guy, but I'm not huge. When I was meeting with these people about that part, they were saying, well, the same thing. We don't know if you're right for this because this guy's supposed to be this huge, you know, intimidating guy. I said, well, you know what? I'm not a huge, but I got a really big voice. And that voice is stage trained. So I knew how to project.
Right.
So rather than being physically huge, I decided, well, I'm just going to yell at this guy, and the reason I'm going to yell at him is because I'm not huge. I'm going to yell at him so that he'll understand that I'm not fooling around, that I really mean what I'm saying, and on top of which, the yelling came also out of a great deal of frustration of really not having a lot of authority, really not having a lot of power. So I yelled a lot, you know, And the producer, Alan Spencer, who is a crazy, crazy person, funny as all get out, and Alan Spencer said, wow, we never saw this like this. How do you handle a guy who's a cop? I mean, the first thing he does is he blows up a building. I mean, Clint Eastwood, you know, Dirty Harry, I mean, he, you know, Clint had already, you know, personified that whole kind of crazy rebellious cop,
right?
But this was a little bit much. I mean, the first episode that we did, I think it was the pilot, he blew up an entire building
to get a sniper on the roof, right? I remember that.
Yeah, instead of shooting a guy or going up there and get him, he blows up the entire. I mean, if you think about that, how the hell do you reprimand a guy who does that?
Yeah,
there's no way to do it. There's only two ways. One is to say, you're fired, or, you know, you're suspended, or get out of here and never come back. I never want to see your face again. That's one way to do it. The other way to do it is if I'm not gonna fire this guy or put him up on charges or something or other, then what do I do? Well, the only other thing is to yell like a crazy person. You know, that was the only other choice. I mean, think about it. That's the only other choice.
Right.
And it worked. You kept him in line with your voice.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the only thing I had left. I mean, I could shoot him, but that wouldn't work.
Well, I can't help it if my father was the greatest sharpshooter of all time. You know, he taught me that a gun is a dangerous weapon, and if used properly, can be a wonderful source of entertainment.
Hammer!
Shoot everything that moves.
Hammer!
You know, I just yelled, Hammer, you! And you blew up a building, you... You know, that all that stuff was based upon the fact that here's this captain whose only recourse in life is to get up in his face and yell and scream. No one who they met did that. So that's how I got that thing. That's how it happened.
Oh.
into Lionheart territory. Have you seen Fighting, the film that I referenced in the prelude to this?
I think I've seen small portions of it.
Okay.
Has it been? Is it like it's been on cable?
It's on cable now.
Oh, it
okay.
Is.
I think I've seen portions of it. Yeah.
It was essentially it was Lionheart minus the family aspect and minus the Foreign Legion aspect, but everything else was was essentially Lionheart.
Oh really? Including the Joshua character?
Yeah. That was Terrence Howard.
Yeah, Terrence Howard is playing a fighter, a former fighter who had to take a fall and got his leg broken, so he had a limp. And
oh, no kidding.
And now managed fighters while working as a street hustler.
Oh, yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah.
And then uses his connections in the upper class fighting ring where he got crippled to get Channing Tatum a shot at money fights.
Yep.
You're joking.
No,
that's
so
the movie.
I got to go. I got to see it.
You got to call your agent.
Nah, that's not. That's not. It's so many years later that they go. Nah, they could easily say no. We had no. It had no. No. We just came up with that ourselves. Believe me, they'd say that. We had no idea. We never saw that movie. Oh yeah, that's what they say. Believe me.
May I help you, gentlemen?
Here to see the lady, man.
You'll have to be a little bit more specific than that.
Oh man, cut the shit. Just tell her Joshua was here with somebody I think she'd like to meet.
What are you working on now? What's in your?
Can you look for? You mean?
Yeah.
I'm actually writing my own stuff. I've been acting for a lot of years, and as I said in the very beginning, that part of Joshua or a part like that has never really come about since then. And what I'm trying to do now is come up with something that I feel strongly about and that maybe I can communicate to. Movie audiences, and so I'm writing something that I'm going to produce. It's going to take place in the South, and I think this is the thing that I've been looking for. So I don't know when it's going to happen. It should happen very soon, but I don't know when.
I also should mention, I don't think I've mentioned this anywhere else in the podcast, but I do want to mention that that we are talking to the Emmy-nominated Harrison Page.
You nominated me?
No, didn't you get an Emmy nomination for Quantum Leap?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
Yes, I did.
All right. I just want to make sure that was nominated, that was mentioned in the course of this podcast.
It was. I was nominated for an Emmy. It was close to being something, that was equal to the Joshua thing, but it wasn't quite.
You're going to listen to Joshua now, huh?
Yeah.
I've been all over the world, man. I've been around from the Big Apple to the Big Orange. I know the score. How you going to get around all that? Small. Huh? Them freeways. A lot of people in L.A., man. A lot of shit going on. A lot of weird-ass motherfuckers running around. Huh? But besides, I owe you lunch.
Well, I just watched the movie again last night for the first time. There's two big things I want to ask you about it. And one is just, was there a discussion when you were making this movie that it's structurally very similar to Midnight Cowboy?
No, that was never mentioned, but you know what? You brought that up. There was a couple of times when I thought about that.
Yeah.
Because there's a little sequence in it where I'm crossing the street.
And you do the, hey, I'm walking here.
Yeah, I don't think I do the words, hey, I'm walking here, but I think I did. That was written. I didn't make that up. And when that happened, I kind of went, yeah, this is kind of like Dustin Hoffman's character in Midnight Cowboy.
And and that was the funny thing, is I was watching the movie last night, and what occurred to me was that that it's basically, the story of the film is, what if Ratso from Midnight Cowboy had actually been good at his job? He was never able to deliver opportunities to John Voight's character the way you were deliver opportunities to Jean-Claude Van Damme's character.
Right, right.
And what if John Voight could kick the shit out of a Samoan, too?
Oh, there's lots of that. Well, the funniest thing about it is, now hearing you talk about it, I always thought that was intentional, but it seems like when it was written, the script was just a bit of a ripoff of, that relationship from that movie, but you brought so much of your own material into it that there's only these couple of moments that make it seem like that.
Right, right, exactly. Yeah, as a matter of fact, Hoffman had a limp. Did he have a limp?
Oh, yeah.
He did?
Yeah, Yeah, he did. He
had kind of like a shuffle.
Yeah, because his was a little bit of a rhythmic bouncing thing.
Yeah.
I got you. You're right. There is a similarity there. It really is. Except that the relationship between Hoffman and Voight was a bit combative. I mean, there, you know, he was already trying to rip John Voight off.
Yeah.
You know, and my character was, Van Damme was not that much of a rip-off as it was, I want to make some money with you, as opposed to, I don't care what happens to you, I want to make some money.
Oh, yeah, I mean, and that's right there at the end, where you specifically, you know, bet against him, so just in case, because Van Damme has bet all of his money on himself, so you
right.
bet all of your money against him, so just in case, he won't
right.
lose everything. And that
right,
is
exactly.
a great moment, too.
Attila. A born killer. Real pro. Not some bum we picked off the street. He likes to toy with his opponents. Give him hope. Then he tears him apart.
The other thing I noticed about the movie that I wanted to ask you about was, first off, I had forgotten how brutal the opening is where a man gets set on fire. I mean, that was very intense in a way that the rest of the movie isn't. But there's this moment in there where he arrives at the hospital and he wants to know who killed his brother. And
right.
I kind of forgotten the details in the movie. I thought that was going to come up. But what amazed me most about the movie is the doctor says, you don't worry about, you know, who did what to who. Right now, all you have to worry about is taking care of your family. And Jean-Claude Van Damme listens to him. There's this weird forgiving aspect to the film that I was very impressed by.
Yeah, yeah. And it doesn't, you're right, it doesn't go there. It doesn't go in that direction where he spends the entire movie, you know, avenging his brother.
Yeah,
you know,
it's never mentioned again.
Never mentioned again. And it is strange in that it goes, he doesn't like go, I want to find the people who killed my brother. But he doesn't. I mean, he goes about trying to take care of his brother's family, which is interesting. And it's an interesting, like a little road as opposed to what would have been, you
the
know,
traditional way.
Predictable. Predictable, right?
I mean, when you were working on the movie, like, did anyone talk about, like, that kind of emotional thing? That it's really not a story about revenge. It's not a story about hate. No, but
never talked about it. But you're right. That's an interesting kind of curve. It doesn't go in a predictable direction.
I guess my question for you is: now that you've told me all of what you brought to this movie, which, as I said, is coincidentally all the stuff I loved. So
right.
I mean, it seems like it was the perfect situation because this is a movie that was already moved towards kind of a lighter action movie because there's forgiveness and it's about family and it's about that. So it seems like it was the perfect opportunity for you to bring all of these character levels to it in a way that you wouldn't have been able to had it been a simple revenge story.
You're absolutely right. It would have been, had it been a simple revenge story, the character that I played would not have had the opportunity to develop because it would have been a straightforward kind of linear story to find these guys who did this. And there would not have been a relationship or the kind of relationship that he and I had on film.
Yeah, it would have been like Bloodsport or Kickboxer, the other
right.
Van Damme movies that fall that there's no heart to them the way there's a heart to this movie.
Right, you're absolutely right.
Hey, the winner, ladies and gentlemen,
right.
Lionheart, King of the Jungle!
Gentlemen, it is time for us to place the final blow on this episode, but before doing so, I want to thank Count Bargelon for suggesting this film, and certainly Mr. Harrison Page for spending time with us to share his memories of Lionheart. Thank you guys both. I really, really, really appreciate it.
Well, it's my pleasure, my friend.
Excellent. Always for me, too.
And to our listeners, please come visit us at our new Facebook fan page, which we promise to fill with various goodies from Nasukashi and its crack team of contributors for all of our friends. Guys, don't ever lose your heart, because you'll never get it back.
There you go. Good man.
All right. Take care, gentlemen.
Oh.
Thank you.